is underway on this Wednesday afternoon by welcoming back to the program our friend Bob Ryan, columnist emeritus of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Bob.
Hello.
How are you this afternoon?
Well, it's nice. Gorgeous day. Sitting here, this is where you envision spring. So I'm very pleased. It's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And some pretty good basketball last night. What did you think of Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals?
People around here have, not everybody, of course, but so many have been clamoring for a close game to see how the Celtics would react, because the open question for them is not talent. They have enough talent. No team has more talented players, 1 through 10, on their roster than the Boston Celtics. But they have this earned a reputation as being a little shaky in clutch situations. They're very good at front running. They won 3 games by 50 this year. 5-0, I said. But anyway, we finally had a close game because, as you know, they romped through the first 2 rounds with tremendous wins. And then we finally got a close game. My summation of what happened in the end is that they got a W. You cannot take it away from them. But rather than a win, it was not losing.
Well, absolutely.
And it didn't settle the issue. And I can tell you one thing. It certainly didn't discourage the Indiana Pacers.
No, and they are such a talented team. My goodness, the shots that they made after that 12-0 start, it felt for a while like they weren't going to miss again. That Halliburton shot right before a halftime, everything was working for them. And then Jaylen Brown pulled out what I think, if they win the NBA championship, might be remembered as one of the key shots of the year.
Well, we go back to where they were trailing, and they needed to create turnover. They got 2 key turnovers. One was self-inflicted. Halliburton dribbled it off himself, and under a little pressure, but nothing extraordinary. That was an awful, egregious error. And then you give Jaylen Brown credit for creating the second one. Yes. Then he makes the shot. Of all people, because as the graphic immediately pointed out, it was the first such shot he's ever made in his career. Under 10 seconds, tie a game. He's never done that before. And he did it. And it was under pressure in the deep corner with a good defender on him. Certainly it's you're right. If they do win, it'll be one of the highlight moments of the postseason.
And I feel like they picked up Jrue Holiday just for a situation like last night.
Well, he's been wonderful from day one. You're never unhappy with him, because if he's not scoring, he's defending, he's doing things. But that was a big night for him, yes. So it was statistically a wonderful night. But with him, it's not always about the statistics. But it was a showcase game for Jrue Holiday, correct.
Certainly not the teams that most people expected to see in the Western Conference Final. How do you size up that series?
One of my number, really, I would say my number one takeaway from the postseason, from the start back on April 14th, is how good the Timberwolves are. I knew the record, but they were in invades, 3-way tie over in the West. And, we respected Denver, and I thought Denver would emerge. I did. And I respected Oklahoma City, and I respected Minnesota, but I didn't know that they could be as good as they are. They're formidable, and they're serious. They took out the defending champions on merit, and I expect them to beat Dallas and be the team that presumably the Celtics will face in the finals. But I'm very impressed with them, every aspect of them. And, of course, their ascendant superstar, Anthony Edwards, that goes without saying. But the two big men are playing together in a way that a lot of the critics didn't think they would be able to when the season started.
Anytime we get to this point in the season, those of us who have watched basketball for a long time reflect on past series and games. And you had a wonderful piece several weeks ago looking back at the 1974 finals, and what a great series that was.
Yes, that was a personal, I have to admit, that was a lot of personal indulgence the Globe granted me. It meant a lot to me. I was a young guy who had started covering the Celtics at 23, and I had not had my opportunity to cover a championship, anything in any sport, and that was my first chance in the finals. So I was emotionally attached to that team as well as intellectually attached. It was a wonderful series, and the Bucks were noble going as far as they did. With key injuries, Lucius Allen and John McLaughlin, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was transcendent, and people have to remember how great he really was. But there were great Celtic performances along the way including Cowens in the seventh game. And it was a lot of fun. I'm glad the Globe indulged me to be able to write that.
And you wrote about your friendship with one of my favorite Celtics from that time period, the great Paul Westphal.
Oh, yes. Well, Paul and I hit it off from the beginning right away. And we were personal friends to the day he died. I still am so sorry. I'm very upset about it. And but he was an interesting guy for sure. Far more than a basketball player, a great husband, father, a man of faith, a man of humor. He just got it, and he was a wonderful companion.
And they had such unique characters on that team, from Paul Silas to the, I don't know if mercurial is the right word, but the always interesting Dave Cowens.
Well, Dave Cowens spent the night after they won. They won on a Sunday afternoon in Milwaukee. We flew back after the game, and Dave wound up spending the night, part of the night, sleeping on the park bench in the Boston Common. And only Dave Cowens, but it's part of the Dave Cowens lore. And yet he's still, when people ask me who's your favorite player, and I just say, well, the best player was Bird, and of course I'm partial to Bird. I did a book with Bird, and I love Larry Bird, and I could rhapsodize for hours about his game. But the most interesting personality, the most interesting person I've ever covered, with the combination of skill and personality and unpredictability and intellectual curiosity, honesty, and everything else, is Dave Cowens, and he's number one in that list.
And what was his comment? I'm paraphrasing it, I'm sure, but that the championship was just so, part of the journey, right?
We get back. This is, of course, the old days, Rich, when no charters, and we are flying home from Milwaukee. And yes, folks, we are changing planes in Chicago. They couldn't even get a direct flight. So we were changing planes in Chicago. And I catch up to him. I don't know why, but in retrospect, I guess I hadn't interviewed him personally after the game. I had other things I was doing. And anyway, I may have interviewed him, but I didn't ask him the big question. So I catch up to him at the airport, and I say, Dave, okay, you finally did it. This is your fourth year, and you're the MVP once we moved, and now you won the championship. What's it mean to you? And he looks at me, and he says, the fun for me was in the doing. This is just something from my portfolio of basketball experiences. A line I have never forgotten, have never been repeated, obviously, by anybody, and it's one of my seminal moments as a writer that I had this unique quote.
We're talking with Bob Ryan here on Downtown. Well, even though they're a 500 team, I'm finding myself really enjoying elements of the Red Sox this season, and nothing more than the remarkable job the pitching staff has done so far. Criswell with another solid outing last night. And I feel like it's the 1960s when he's out there, just get the ball and throw it. He doesn't even need a pitch clock.
The starters are keeping them afloat at the 500 mark, which we all thought before the season would be a benchmark. If they could go 500, it would be acceptable for what they had to offer. And so far, they're keeping up to that. The offense, I think, will get better. I think Vaughn Grissom will eventually hit. Devers has obviously found himself after a slow start. But the guy I love and the fun guy, what a night for Jarrett Duran, huh? How about a home run and a steal at home? That's a parlay we don't get too often. I love Abreu. I like watching him. We're so excited about the potential of Sedan Rafaela. There's some good players here that we may be able to hang our hat on. Connor Wong has turned out to be a marvel, a revelation. We didn't know no idea that he could hit this well. The catching is in pretty good hands between himself and McGuire. They catch the ball better in the outfield. They are definitely more entertaining. They do have fallow periods of hitting, no question. The hitting could be better, but maybe when they get Tristis Casas back, they're talking about June 20, I believe, is the target date. That's a big loss because that's another good young player. That's four. Think about it. You've got Abreu, Duran, Rafaela, and Casas. Not to mention Grissom is still young. There's a nucleus there of something pretty good, and I think there's something you can hang your hat on.
When you mentioned Duran with the steal of home, the homer last night, and I think he's on a pace now for about 25 triples this season. Obviously, Fenway Park is a decent triples ballpark, but that's an overlooked stat and a remarkable number if he gets that many.
Oh, You know, you got me. It's one of my favorite things. You know, the triples, the all-time record of 36 and 1912 by a guy named Chief Wilson of the Pirates. The all-time record total of career 312 by Wahoo Sam Crawford. the fact that 20 triples is a rare, rare, rare thing. If that's something to shoot for, we all love triples. Triples are the most fun hit in baseball, no question.
You had a wonderful
second only to an inside the park home run.
Right,
would be number one. But then we go triples, no question.
You had a wonderful tweet the other day after the PGA Championship, and I think it speaks to what we love so much about sports, that you can be invested in watching a guy you don't really care one way or the other about make that big birdie putt to win the championship.
I really was. I just didn't want him not to do it. I mean, it was more like, oh, please don't have him agonizing over that putt, and you know, getting in the playoffs. He might have won the playoff, although he frankly is so much as said he didn't think he would win the playoffs because he wouldn't think he could. DeChambeau would be too much to deal with. Anyway, I was rooting for him, and it just curled in on that last, as we were looking at it on our right, his left. It curled in. It came very close to not going in, but I felt good for him. And what a thing. The idea of it doesn't happen very often that you get a birdie on the 72nd hole of any tournament to win by a stroke. That doesn't happen very often. And when you need that clutch birdie to get the job done, and he did it, and you had to root for the guy. But my point was that this is why we love sports. I'm not invested in Xander Schauffele. I'm not a big fan of his. I'm not an anti-fan. He's just there to me. He's a good player. But I wanted him to make that. He deserved to make that putt in my mind. And I think many other, you know, frankly, million people thought the same thing.
And all the people who love watching reality TV miss out on the fact that sports is the ultimate reality show.
It is. You know, we can go on. I can go off my mount my soapbox and talk about where everyone should have sport in their repertoire. But I also believe everyone should have literature and art and theater and film and books and things. You need the full spectrum to have a full, you know, enjoyable life if you're privileged enough to have leisure time to spend. And sports pushes a button that is not there, and throw in music and entertainment too, concerts. It's a different. They all touch a different part of your inner soul, and sports is not replicable. There is nothing to compare to that a concert provides or an art museum provides. They provide other kind of thrills and excitement and interest, but they do not provide that kind of interest.
Bob, this is Bruce, and as I read and teach literary fiction, I really got to agree with you that something I read many years ago, and I don't remember exactly when you wrote it, but you know, there is something about reading about sport across the genres that teaches people, I think, how to better act with their fellow citizens in society. Whether you're reading Heinz's essay on the death of a racehorse, or you're reading a column you've written on a character like Dave Cowens, we find a way to engage life that we don't engage otherwise because we can watch sport.
Yeah, we can, and we can all. We're all entitled to form an opinion, you know, and embrace favorites or decide who's a villain. It's right, and as Rich just said, it's the ultimate reality show, and it gives us an opportunity to roam around in the mind I can't imagine. I was raised in a sports family, in a sports culture. I as I often have said, and I probably have said it on this program, I honestly don't remember a time growing up, when I'm talking about my, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of age, honestly don't remember a time in my world, in my family's life, when we weren't at a game, going to a game, or getting ready to go to a game. That's the way we lived. My father was involved in sports, and my mother went right along with the program. She married him. She knew what she was getting into, and just as my wife did, quite frankly. That's the culture. That doesn't mean it's exclusive to you don't do anything else or care about anything else. No, it's not it, but it's part of your repertoire. In my life, it provided a living. I'm fortunate that I was able to do that.
You got my wheels turning last night when you posted asking the question of those of us of a certain age, what was the first 45 RPM single you bought for you? It was The Killer, Jerry Lee Lewis.
It was I got it in 1956, either 7, whichever year it was. I think it was 56, Christmas. My parents gave me a record player. And I got on my blue Schwinn, and the next day I pedaled up to the record store. Was a not about two blocks away. I cuddled up to the record store and I plunked down my 89 cents, if you remember, or something like that, and got a whole lot of shaking going on. And now they had given me, when they gave me the record player, they gave me an old blue a tin box of to house my 45s, and they gave me they went and researched the top 10 songs of the day or something close like that. And so they gave me 10 45s to go along with the record player. But my first personal independent purchase was of Jerry Lee Lewis, Whole Lot of Shaking Going On.
I'm embarrassed to say.
That was a fun question. I got tremendous responses, you know, from some people. Some of them just made me laugh. One of them, two people, are you ready for this? Two people said Disco Duck.
Oh, Lord.
No,
well,
no.
Well, mine's almost as bad. I'm pretty sure the first record I bought, I was about 8 years old, and it was a song called Winchester Cathedral.
Oh, no, the new vaudeville band.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that. That was I love that song. And in fact, Sinatra even did it, which was a mistake.
Yes.
He made some songs he never should have made, and that's one of them. The new vaudeville band, Winchester Cathedral. Oh, come on, you love that song.
I did. And I think the second one was Petula Clark's Downtown, and now it's the theme for our show.
Okay.
So it stayed with me all those years.
I believe
Ed Sullivan called her. Or is Ed Sullivan called her Petula?
Petula Clark. I think I bought two. One was used, Rocket 88, because I always wanted to have it, and then I went and lost it. And the other was probably one of the, whatever the first, Love Me Do or Please Please Me, one of the first Beatles ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Yep. Well, Love Me Do was, that was their first hit over there, I think, before it was well produced, before we learned about it.
Well, Bobby,
I'm not a Beatles, expert, but I love the Beatles.
We're excited that you're going to be up here coming up in June. Bruce is organizing the Sports Literature Association gathering. What is Bob in for when he gets here to Eastern Maine, Bruce?
Have a great time. The people are so incredibly excited, and it's a very collegial, non-stuffy group. Most people are academics, but not all of them. A lot of independent scholars and people who just come and the... We'll have the program soon, which I'll send to Bob so he can see all the things that are coming up.
I'm really looking forward to it, Bruce, and it's going to be a lot of fun because we are about to embark on our annual trek to Maine. We will be heading up to Weld later this week, and my wife will be in Saunce for a good part of the next 2 months in Weld, and I'll be joining her. I'll have to commute. I got things going on, but I'll definitely be spending a lot of time in your fine state in the next couple of months.
Well, we're really excited. I'll be sending you the menu options for the banquet and the like, and Gerald Wood unfortunately can't make it at the last minute. He was brokenhearted, but there are so many people that said, "You got who?" And I said, "Yeah, we got Bob Ryan. We're really excited."
Well, I'm looking forward to it very much.
Well, Bob, it's always great to talk with you. Appreciate you making time for us this afternoon, and we look forward to seeing you when you're up here, and enjoy every minute you spend here in the state of Maine.
Okay, I shall. Okay, anytime. You know that, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Bob. Bob Ryan with us here on Downtown on this Wednesday afternoon.